Today, you can write down the title. It's The Sabbath Day, The Origins in the Old Testament. We're going to look at a couple of the basics of the Sabbath day. We've been working through the fundamental beliefs, several different ones of them, and I wanted to touch on this one because this is a very defining topic for us. The Sabbath itself, you know, every 7 days our life is completely reset. We set aside this day, and we really define ourselves by this day in some sense, because we take ourselves out of the world, we take ourselves out of our normal routines, out of every normalcy that we normally do, of whether it's work or household chores or grocery shopping, and we reset and we set this time aside to dedicate to God. And we view this as a binding part of God's doctrine, part of his scripture, part of the covenant, the law of God that he has for us. And so the fourth commandment is built within those 10 commandments. We're going to look a little bit at that today as we walk through Israel and their involvement with God and how this all plays together. But this is a defining aspect of our church life. This is part of who we are, and we cease from everything else and kind of reorient our weeks from this point on. Sometimes we're looking forward to the Sabbath because we know we get a little bit of time to relax, but it also resets us for the next week going forward of what our focus is, what our goals are, the importance of this day, and how much it means to us. Back when Worldwide Church of God changed their stance on this doctrine, United, Separated, we formed, when United got up and running, they took months. We took months to really redefine what the Sabbath is, because it was a key piece of what no longer existed as important for a Worldwide Church of God. And this particular belief, the fourth commandment, is very important to God. We'll look at some of that as to why that is. But as United was forming this and redefining and digging into the basics of what the Sabbath is, we actually lean quite heavily on the Seventh Day Adventists. There's an instructor who was at the university in Michigan, Andrews University. He was a main person. His name is Samuel Bakioki. And he wrote his doctrinal dissertation on the Sabbath. And so we leaned heavily on his knowledge and his understanding of the Sabbath and what all that meant. He actually had an opportunity to study at the Vatican under the aegis of the Roman Catholic Church. And he was able to go through the archives and actually follow the history of the Sabbath and how it was changed and all the information that was documented. It's the whole story of the Sabbath day itself. He actually wrote a book quite extensively titled From Sabbath to Sunday. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Some of you actually here may remember him, because back in 1995, he was actually invited to Indianapolis as a guest speaker and did I don't know how many presentations to go over the Sabbath and what it actually meant, just to kind of bolster the doctrine, because that was one of the key things that was disregarded and discarded as far as not needing to be kept anymore with when Worldwide changed what they believed was God's law. Now, we're going to look at several different aspects of the Sabbath. Today, we're only going to get into the origins of the Old Testament. We will shift through and look at the New Testament and see the New Covenant and the New Testament church and try to understand and sort through and see how valuable this Sabbath day still is and what it means to God, because we have nothing without the Sabbath. We really don't. When we think about what God has done as setting this aside, it's real easy to disregard all of his laws if we're able to disregard this one, if we can throw out the Sabbath day. So I want to look at the fundamental belief that we have. This is fundamental belief 2.1.10, so 2.1.10. And this is what it says. It's not as long as some of our other ones, pretty concise. It says, "We believe that the seventh day of the week is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. On this day, we are commanded to rest from our labors and worship God, following the teachings and example of Jesus, the apostles, and the New Testament church." So it's rather comprehensive. Even though it's concise, there's a lot packed in here when we think about this, of what we're commanded to do and not commanded to do. Because we're actually given something not to do. We're not supposed to work. Most of our other statements, most of it, the other instructions, God says, don't do this. Don't be engaged in this. Don't be involved in this. But for the Sabbath day, he actually says, rest. He says, get rid of all of the other stuff that you normally do. He goes, have a little bit of rest. So there's two aspects to this one. There's two major components, the first one being rest and the second one, worship. These are the two things that we're supposed to do on the Sabbath. I'm sorry if you just spend your entire day sleeping. That's not what it was designed for. That's not what God had intended for it. There is a benefit there. That is one of the blessings that it is. Sometimes you do get to sleep in a little bit longer. Afternoon services in Indy allows for that. But God says you're supposed to also worship. We're supposed to worship, and that means that we refocus our minds. We refocus our attention. And it doesn't mean that we don't think about God and we don't have a relationship with God every other day of the week, because that's one of the big arguments, right? Well, I worship God every day. I love God every day. Well, we do too. But we also respect him enough that we set aside the day that he goes, no, this is a special day. This is significant. And so that rest part, the getting rid of our work, whatever income that you make, whatever that job is that you have, putting that aside, our household chores, mowing the yard. Recently, you see a lot of people doing their leaves. This time of year is the raking of the leaves and the bundling them all up. All of these things we set aside because this day is supposed to be something else. The focus is something else. Not what we have to get done, not what our chore list is, not what I don't have time for. He says, put all of that aside. Put all of that aside. He says, today is a focus on me. Your laundry will still be dirty tomorrow. Worry about that tomorrow. He goes, but today, relax. Rest. So we have that physical rest. But more importantly, there's a spiritual side of this where he tells us to worship. To worship. That's probably the more important piece of this. The rest is nice. It's a benefit and a bonus. But we can't ever lose focus that today is a spiritual day. Today is a spiritual moment for us. And I don't think we fully understand all the dimensions of the Sabbath without that piece of it and what that means. And not just for us, but ultimately all of mankind. Because eventually all of mankind will benefit from the Sabbath day. They'll get to partake of the Sabbath day when God reveals what his true commands are and helps them to understand what he is expecting. There's a definition I want to read. This is out of the Webster's New Universal and Unabridged Dictionary from 1983. It says, the Sabbath, it was set apart in the fourth commandment of the Decalogue to be observed as a day of rest from all secular labor or employment. This was originally the seventh day of the week, Saturday, as the day on which God rested from the work of creation, and this day is still observed by Jews and some Christians as the Sabbath. Found that interesting that they actually not only included the Jews, but also noticed and recognized that some Christians do this. We are not the only Christian group out there that observes the Sabbath. There's a lot of Christians out there who do observe the Sabbath. Some of them are in groups. Some of them are in individuals. Oftentimes when people come into the church, one of the things they're looking for, they Google Sabbath keepers. They are specifically looking for that. I don't know why God uses this as one of those key pieces of opening people's eyes, but this seems to be at the forefront oftentimes when new people, when I talk to people, it was the Sabbath that was one of the things that attracted them, or one of the first things that they recognized was that they needed to be partaking of, and that's how they end up finding us. One of the things that I also find interesting is oftentimes these groups that uphold the Sabbath and the validity of it and the sanctity of it, they don't put the holy days on the same standard. They don't view those in the same fashion, which is interesting because they kind of go hand in hand. They're both sanctified. They're both set apart. They're both holy. But at this point, they only recognize the weekly one, not the annual one. If you would, you can go ahead and head over to Romans chapter 1. That's where I want to start out today. I told you we're going to look at the origins and Israel, but I want to start out here because this is an interesting piece. When we think about worshiping God and what that means, the relationship that we have with him, the Sabbath is not an end. It may be at the end of the week, but it is a means to an end. It's a means to an end. Now, what does that mean? Well, this is part of God's entire plan. This is how God works us towards salvation. Understanding what a holy day is, the sanctity of that, what setting apart is. Without understanding that, baptism doesn't make any sense. Because what God has done with the Sabbath day, he does with us as individuals. By putting his Spirit inside of us, he sanctifies us. He sets us apart. Flip over. It's Romans chapter 1. If you may have beat me there. It's verse 22. Because Paul is talking about the state of the world here and what is going on, what's taking place. The people in society at that time, it's interesting what they value, what they're worshiping, the pieces of their life that are important. It's often similar to what we see today with individuals who have a focus on either money, financial gain, positions, positions of authority, positions of power, the things they can accumulate. All sorts of things take priority. And this time that Paul is talking about is no different. They have a worship system based around the things that they see, which is really unique because what they start doing is they start worshiping the creation over the creator, the things that were created. It's Romans chapter 1, starting in verse 22, he says, "Professing to be wise, they become fools, change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. Therefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness in the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the creature or creation rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." This is where we need to pause for a minute and really think about what that means. For them, it was easy because they're idols, they're statues, they're wooden figurines, they're stone figurines. They had all of these images of gods and goddesses, of animals, the sun, whatever it was that they actually focused and worshiped was created things. Which is a shame to ignore the Creator and all of that. Why is that important for us? What does that have to do? Well, it's because we have to be very careful of how we treat the Sabbath. Because we can turn the Sabbath into the same thing. We can worship the Sabbath day versus worshiping God on the Sabbath. And that's where we really get into tricky. We can keep talking with words back and forth about what all this means. But when we think about this, when God laid this out in his commands, one of the pitfalls of legalism and fundamentalism, which is really kind of where we fall into, there's a strictness that we have with God's laws. There's an understanding that the approach that we have to have is a reverent respect for God's law and his authority and his commands. But we have to be careful as well. We have to be really careful because the Jews did the same thing. The Jews valued the Sabbath day. They understood the sanctity of the Sabbath day, what it meant. And in order to protect that, they created additional laws outside of what God had established in order to protect that. Now, theirs was that they didn't want to go back into captivity. They didn't want to be taken out of their homeland again. And so it was a protective barrier to keep some of these things holy. But what it ended up turning into is that they worshiped the Sabbath more than God. We have to look at ourselves and make sure that we aren't taking that same approach, that the Sabbath isn't the thing that we're worshiping. Now, we're very thankful for the Sabbath and what God has done with it. And like I said, we can play with words back and forth exactly what that means because we do have to toe that line. And because there is a sanctity of the Sabbath day and what God expects of us. But this has been one of the big accusations against the church for many, many years now. We can be accused of worshiping the Sabbath because of the strictness that we hold to. Mm-hmm. And it's not always wrong because there is a fear and a respect that we show God through honoring his day. And it's honestly something that has tripped up a lot of people throughout the years of trying to find that line. Because the Sabbath ends up being a big gray area. God did not lay it out and say at 8 o'clock you wake up in the morning. By 9 o'clock you're done with breakfast and you start Bible study. 10 o'clock is prayer time. 11 o'clock you start getting dressed for church. 12 o'clock you go to church. 1 o'clock you start church. He doesn't lay out our day. He doesn't tell us what we're supposed to be doing, when we're supposed to be doing it. He goes, the seventh day is holy. It's set apart. So treat it as such. And we sit back sometimes. We go, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? And for years, we've gone down the road of saying, don't do this, don't do this. We don't do this as individual families, not even just as a church. We each have our own little customs that we do on the Sabbath day. A lot of times it's coming into Friday evening. I know a lot of families do special dinners where they get out the nice silverware and the nice bowls and they put candles and light candles and they do something special. And these little traditions that we have and these customs are nice. It doesn't take away from the Sabbath. But we each have things that we do and we don't do. And so it's not this broad blanket where God says, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. We have done that. We have created those things, and rightfully so to some degree, but we have to make sure that we don't cross over that line because we have to be so grounded in our belief and understand what the Sabbath truly is and what it actually means to us. Because there's some very insidious arguments out there, one of the worst ones being that all days are holy. By Christ's sacrifice, all time has now become holy. And that's why people will say, well, I worship God every day of the week. I dedicate every day to God. Which is how they get around the sanctity of the Sabbath. That's scary when we think about that. And by us upholding the Sabbath, we don't disregard every other day. We're so thankful that God gives us the blessings every day that He does. But we do have to be careful. Because people will use Christ's sacrifice as that nullifying factor to say no time is significant because all time is now God's. It kind of takes control away from God a little bit when we do that because then we can make up whatever we want. If we say all time is holy, we've removed God's influence on that. And we'll take a look at a couple of these scriptures here. This is kind of the outline that we're going to work through, the kind of the summary of our explanation. Today we're going to look at those origins and we're going to look at the Israel and the Sabbath, the Old Testament and that involvement. And then next time we'll get into the Christ and the Sabbath as well as the New Testament. But we need to prove this scripturally because the ultimate proof comes from the scripture, but also our observance, how we carry ourselves. And it's experiencing that rest, experiencing the closeness that we have with God, the relationship that we have God, and the relationship that we have with each other. Now, we'll get into that a little bit because it's important that we are together, that we come together. That's one of the benefits, you know, keeping it, resting it, worshiping God, fellowshipping. This is that spiritual relationship. This is all of that piece of developing what the Sabbath is, what it means to us. So you start out by heading all the way back to Genesis chapter 2. When we look at the origins of this, we have to go back to the beginning. This is Genesis chapter 2. If you look at verse 2, let's see if I can keep my Bible from falling apart. I think I've told you that the first couple books of the Bible are no longer attached to the binding. So this is Genesis chapter 2. If you look at verses 2 and 3, it says, "And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done. He rested on the Sabbath, on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. And then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it." This is built into the account of creation. The very beginning, we find that for 6 days he created all of the stuff, all of the things. We keep discovering more and more as science improves and the telescopes improve. we see more and more of outer space. We don't know what all he created at this time, but we know he created our world, our universe, our earth, our animals, and us. All of these things he did those first 6 days, he fashioned everything, everything it took to sustain life on this planet. And then he says on the seventh day, it becomes part of creation. That seventh day is still built into that creation period where he says he rested. He had done his work. He rested from all of it. Now, he didn't need to. He wasn't tired. He wasn't exhausted. He wasn't wore out from this. But this is a statement where he says, this day is different. He didn't do it for himself. He did it for us. He did it so that we would understand that this is set aside completely different than the other 6 days. And we still hold on to that today. We still value that today. What this does, which is extremely helpful, is that this tells us that the Sabbath day is not connected to any of the other covenants. It's not connected to any nationality. It's not connected to any peoples. It's not connected to any individual. This was established at creation. Aside from all of that, outside of all of those, all the work that he had been doing, this is done and it's not connected to those. There's a lot of covenant relationships. A little over a year ago, we worked through those. We looked at all the different, we looked at the 10 of the covenants that God had made with people and nations. We even touched on this a tiny bit. But this falls outside of that. While we do find the Sabbath throughout history, it predates all those covenants. We see it built into the Ten Commandments that were given at Mount Sinai, but it predates that. We find it here at creation, where he rested from all the work that he had done. There's a renowned Jewish scholar who wrote about the Sabbath. He coined this term, a temple in time. His last name is Tisa, but a temple in time. It's unique to think about that because what that means, this temple in time. When we think about temples, we oftentimes go back to the actual physical temples. For Israel in the wilderness, we first see the tabernacle there where God talked with Israel and worked with Israel. Then we see Solomon build the temple. And there's another temple after that, but we don't look at that the same because we never actually see God's presence there at the second temple. But we know he was there in the first two, in the wilderness and in Solomon's temple. God's presence was there. But this temple in time, when we think about what that means, it doesn't matter where we are. It doesn't matter what country we're in. It doesn't matter who we're surrounded by. The Sabbath is set aside. No matter where you end up, on Friday evening at sunset, that starts the Sabbath. That begins this Sabbath day, this time of rest and this time of worship. So it's a temple set in time, which I found very interesting. Mr. McNeely brought that up several years ago in his ABC class. But it really helps us to understand that what this day is. This is our temple in time. And it doesn't matter our location. It doesn't matter what we're doing outside of this day. You could be sent 600 miles away for a work, but on the Friday evening at sunset, you're still going to have this time set aside. You're going to have this sanctity. We have to have that mind frame set when we understand the importance of it. I talk to some of our youth at times. I say, pay attention to where you're looking for jobs. Now, we have some areas of the country where it's 4 hours to the closest congregation. And the people who live in those areas, you want to know how often they actually get to services? Once a month, once every 2 months. The reality is not very often because it's a challenge. 8 hour drive just to go to services, that makes it really difficult, especially with the technology that we have now. Thankfully, we do have it. But it's not supposed to be in place of, because a big part of it is us being together. That's part of the value, that fellowship. And so we have to think about that. We have to think about this Sabbath day, this temple in time. It's unhindered by location and it's unmarred by images. We don't set something else up aside as the valuable part of it. This is us and our relationship with God. The word rested in the Hebrew is Shabbat. They use this in two forms. Oftentimes we see words and nouns and verbs. This is the same thing. And so when we think about that, in the literal sense, it's a noun. It's a set time. It's the seventh day of the week. But there's also action, the verb, or a lack of action, because we purposely set aside what we normally do. We don't go to work. We don't do our normal chores. The kids aren't in here, but that doesn't mean that they don't have to make their beds. They can still make their beds. We have these normal things that we do, but this is talking about this work, that labor that we do, that we would normally do on other days. And so there is an action part of the Sabbath. And that's the resting from the labor part, but also the action of getting into this relationship with God, a deeper relationship with God through prayer, through Bible study, the discussions that we have. That is all part of this action. In the New Testament, the Greek word is sabbaton. And the Revised Standard Version, they put this as solemn rest or a day of solemn rest. In both the Hebrew and the Greek origins, the idea of resting or ceasing from work or ceasing from labor is a key to the understanding of the Sabbath and the value that the Sabbath holds. The less that we try to play with that and toe that line of what solemn rest means, I think the better off we are. I told you it's not laid out minute by minute or hour by hour of what the Sabbath day is supposed to look like. Am I allowed to do this or am I not allowed to do this? Is this acceptable? We have to be really careful how we tread. We really do, because we shift into a situation where you start having the focus of the Sabbath be our focus. And that's where I said we run into the danger of worshiping the Sabbath over God. If we're more worried about what we can and can't do or what is allowed, because God hasn't laid all of that out. He told us to rest from our work. And he said, worship me. Those are two very distinct components that he has given to us. And as family units, you have to figure out what that means for what your family looks like. And each of it's going to be slightly different. I say we have to be really careful is because we can be very judgmental at times. We can put what I think onto you and can start criticizing and thinking you're doing something wrong because of a standard that I hold, which isn't necessarily wrong. And so you do need to take time. But as individuals, as family units, you need to go through and answer some of these questions and come up with what does your life look like? How do you bring God into your Sabbath day? How do you refocus your week so that he becomes the focal point, even more so than every other day? Because that's the thing. God's always our focus. Every single day he is our focus, or at least he should be. But the Sabbath is something different, which is why we have to be really careful with how we treat it and what we do on it, because we get to experience some great benefits. Some wonderful benefits when we actually truly keep this day. It's refreshing. It's nourishing. It's nourishing. It gives us strength. Gives us a refreshed mind, a refreshed spirit. Being together is a huge component, which is why our shut-ins struggle so much. If you've talked to any of our shut-ins lately, you'll find out how valuable it is to be able to have the webcast, but there's still a massive amount that they miss out on. And they'll tell you that. There's still a hole that they can't fill, which is why we always say, call the shut-ins. Write them a letter. Write them an email. Go see them. Call them. Text them. Do something with them because they need the fellowship even more than we do. Because we get to be here every week. We get to see each other every week. We get to experience the full benefit of it. And we all do need a day off. God's pretty smart when he creates everything. He knew that we couldn't run 24/7, 7 days a week. Even business. In business, they've done many, many studies showing comparisons between working their crew 7 days a week versus giving them days off. And even though they put in significantly more hours working 7 days a week, the workers were much more productive for those 5 days than they were in the totality of the 7 days. So not only are they the company happy, but the employees are happy because they get 2 days off. So God is masterful in everything he does. We see consistency in his plan. And he knows us in and out. He knows what we need and what we're capable of. We just have to discover that. The world needs to discover that God knows what he's doing. He knew what he was doing when he created us. And so we value this time so that we can draw near to him. Oftentimes we see things repeated in the Bible. We see God going over these pieces again. If you head over to Exodus chapter 16 now. Exodus chapter 16, if you look at verse 23, God doesn't completely redefine the Sabbath day here, but he brings it back up in a pretty bold manner. This is Exodus chapter 16. Because what happens is throughout the history of the Bible, God doesn't always follow it piece by piece for us. We don't see Abraham technically keeping the Sabbath. We don't see Noah keeping the Sabbath strictly by him saying they were doing this. But through the accounts, we know that they were righteous people, that they had a relationship with God, that they respected his commandments, and they worked through some of these things. But here we get down into Exodus, and he brings it back up. He brings it back up in a pretty forceful manner. If you look at chapter 16, if you look at verse 23, it says, so this is right after they have left Egypt. It says, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So at some point through that captivity, the 400 years, they had forgotten about what this day was. God frees them from Pharaoh's rule and his reign. And he goes, you need to pay attention to this now. Because you may not remember, but tomorrow is something special. And if you read the rest of that chapter, this is talking about manna as well. We see that what God has set this up and says, I'll provide for you on that seventh day. He goes on Friday, collect double, and then you'll be good. They don't understand. They don't quite get this, and some of them go out and they collect stuff on the Sabbath, and they didn't understand what he actually meant. Because for them, this was all new. For them, they lost what this held. And so God deals with them in a very direct way. As I said, we can't follow it with Moses and Noah, or not Moses, with Abraham and Noah particularly. But here, he brings it back up. And this is why a lot of the world ties this into something that only deals with Israel. Something that is sacred to Israel. Solely for Israel. That's why I started in the beginning. Because in the beginning, there was no Israel. This wasn't just for those people. If you flip over just a couple pages to chapter 20. In chapter 20 and verse 8, as part of the Sinai covenant, the Sabbath day is included. There's no denying that. There's no getting around it. He makes a very big claim here in Exodus 20 and verse 8. He says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. He says, remember the Sabbath. If I say, remember the Thanksgiving potluck. Now that can mean two things, right? I can say, remember it for next year. A year from now, we're going to be doing it again. But most likely, I'm talking about 2 weeks ago. Remember back. Remember what we did. The conversation that we had. Remember when we talked about this. God says, remember when I gave you this at the very beginning, when I established this. He goes, this hasn't gone away. This hasn't changed. But this helps us to give us understanding that he was calling attention to memory. He goes, this is something that has always existed. He goes, you may not have experienced it in your lifetime. He goes, but your relatives did. He goes, they actually kept it. He goes, you have to remember these things. And for us, we start to see that this is a continuous requirement that was set at the very beginning of time. Our time, not God's time, our time. For us. It was at that creation, built into our creation, on that sixth day. And there was a severe penalty if they broke this. There was a caution that was given. If you flip over a couple more chapters to chapter 35, in verse 2, this is laid out plain for them. God's not one for muddling words or shying away from being firm. He's very merciful and gracious, but he's also serious. If you look at verse 2 of chapter 35, he says, work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh day shall be a holy day for you, a Sabbath rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death. That's the severity, that's the level that God holds the Sabbath day. He goes, nobody will infringe on that. Now, we understand that as Israel, God did a lot of things for them to protect them. As his model nation, as the example for all the world around, he had a high expectation of what they should and should not do. And the death penalty, that was so that would not corrupt the other people. That was so that he could say, this is serious. This is serious. So in the process of this covenant relationship with Israel, as he goes through this and establishes this with Israel, this got very personal. This got very intimate. This was community-wide and individual, which is the same for us today. As a community, as a church, we uphold this day. We know there's hundreds of other congregations around the world meeting on the Sabbath, which is really a neat idea and thought. I can't tell you how many different messages I get from people around the other side of the world that text us. Even my brother in California, when we start texting Happy Sabbath on all our emails or all of our texts, sometimes they're like, seriously, you guys are in the Sabbath already? They're only 3 hours away, but for them, they're still in the thick of their day. They're still working. And for us to be celebrating about the Sabbath here, they're going, I'm sure it puts a little bit of jealousy in there. They wish they weren't working. They wish they were relaxing already and resting. But even in their temporary dwellings, in the wilderness, God goes, Israel, this is serious. This is for real. He goes, this day is holy. And even as they got into their permanent dwelling in Canaan, when he gives them the promised land, this was still supposed to be upheld. This was a holy time and a time of rest. And that's why this falls as a spiritual law. This isn't just a physical law that we do. We aren't just strict law keepers. We love this day. We look forward to this day. I don't know how many times Sunday and Monday I start looking forward to the Sabbath again. You're probably right there with me. There are some weeks that as soon as you get started, you're like, ooh, this is going to be a rough one. Just 6 days left. Because we hold a value on it. And not so that we can sleep the day away, but it's so that we have this. The fire that we get when we come through those doors and we know we're going to get hugs and we're going to talk and we're going to laugh. Sometimes we're going to cry. Because this relationship that we have here is the same type of relationship that we have with God. That's what he's teaching us. That's what he's bringing us into. And even though he codified it inside the Ten Commandments, it predates that. It was set from the beginning. And so it can't be done away with. It can't be thrown out with the Sinai Covenant. It can't be disregarded as part of that. Which is interesting to think about in all in itself. Because Christians don't throw out all 10 commandments. This is really the only one of those 10 commandments that they try to throw out, that they try to disregard. This is why we have to understand the distinction, understand what God has done. And unfortunately, it has gotten lost in translation over the years with people. And people have abandoned it. Israel abandoned it. They took it for granted and they let it go. It no longer holds the value that it once did to them. If you flip back now, just a couple chapters to Exodus 31. With Israel and the Sabbath, over here in 31, we're going to hop around here just a tiny bit. But if you look at verse 12 of Exodus 31, it says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying," in verse 13, it says, "Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you." And if you drop down to verse 17, it says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. On the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." Now, does this make it only for Israel? Is he specifically assigning this to them? If we only had these verses, maybe. You might be able to make an argument, if this was the only piece that we had, that this was a sign between them and God, that this was the relationship that they had. But it's not. He keeps it open-ended. That's why we're going through all of these. That's why we look at all the pieces, because when we bring this to the New Testament, we start to see the New Testament church keep it. We see the reality. We don't ever see Christ question this. We don't see Christ change this. So the Sabbath outlasts just Israel. But it was a sign. It was a sign in the same way that it's still a sign today. It's still a sign today. We are God's people. We are God's children. We do that, and we show him love, and we show him respect by following what he has asked of us. Thankfully, he doesn't kill us if we don't keep the Sabbath. I can't tell you where that gray line begins and where that gray line ends, which is why I said you as individuals and you as family, a family unit, have to work through this. You have to rationalize and try to understand the value of this day. Not just the value of this day, but how God holds this day. That's why we're going through a lot of these. Looking at it at the beginning, looking at it at Mount Sinai, we look at it with Israel here, of what he calls this. It's his sign. It's something important. We see that it was a death penalty for them. That's the seriousness of what he held to. Now you can write down Mark 2:27. Mark 2:27 is the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for us, not the other way around. Today was the day that we are supposed to connect with our Father, even more, on a much deeper level than every single day. He knows we're busy because he's given us responsibilities. As a father and as a husband, he tells me I'm supposed to care for my family. I'm supposed to treat my family. I'm supposed to love my family. I have to clothe and feed my family, which is becoming more difficult as they get bigger. I'm not kidding. I can't keep food in the house. We'll have to buy a cow. Those are all things that he has told me I have to do. And so he doesn't expect me 24/7 to just pray and do Bible study and worship. He goes, you do have other responsibilities. So he knows we're kind of distracted all week long. Now it doesn't mean we cut him off, that he's non-existent. But it's sometimes he takes a back seat. Now, he never should, but he does. That's us having to work through the reality of how do we do better every day. But he gives us this day where he says, it's about me. It's about my people. It's about us. It's about this relationship that we have. And we understand that Israel included all the descendants of Abraham, all 12 tribes, all 12 sons. Jacob ended up putting his name on Joseph, which transferred the blessings to Ephraim and Manasseh. When we think about that, we think about all of those tribes and where they ended up and what they did and how they defined culturally. Where are they today? Which one stuck to this? The Orthodox Jews, the conservative Jews, not even all the Jews. Not all 12 sons. But the Jewish people still hold this. They still hold a value that this is defining them. That's why I read that Webster's Dictionary definition, is because it's significant. Because those people are defined by this. They're associated with the Sabbath day. I guarantee you, at some point in your life, if you've ever been out, you've been dressed up, it may have been your neighbor. You're heading out to your car dressed up. They go, where are you going? You go, I'm going to church. Are you Jewish? It happens because they are associated with the Sabbath. It is part of who they are. And thankfully, it's part of who we are. It's a sign. We are a sign of his people. It's an interesting concept to think about. Because not all the remnant of the Israelites are keeping this. Most of them, we don't know where they are. Reuben, Gad, they didn't hang on to this. But the Jews have. And it's an identifying sign. Now, like I said, they've kind of taken it to the extreme. They've taken it a little bit further than probably they should have. And they hold it in a different light than what God really intended. But they're clutching on to it, and they're not going to let that go. For thousands of years now, they have held on to this day because it is special. It is significant. They're not known for not being adulterers or not being thieves. They don't do those things as well, but they're known for the Sabbath day. They're known for that Sabbath day. That's the identifying mark. And no matter what they were persecuted for throughout the years, they have clung to that. Because this is their sign. In Revelation 12, at the end of it, you know, Satan goes out to make war with the remnant. The church. We know he's going to fight. We know he's going to fight the offspring. He hates God's people. He hates God's church. What do you think one of those identifying marks is going to be? We have always believed, and I still believe today, that the Sabbath is going to be one of those easy identifying marks. We can't really hide that. We should never want to hide it. But we know the Sabbath day is something that we're going to look for. The commandments are still significant today. Because in Romans, or in Revelation 12, at the end of it, it says, he's going to search out those It says, those who keep commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. That's who he's looking for. That's who he's looking for. And so even in the end, through the entire plan of God, through the entire existence of humanity, this is still a peace that continues on. From the beginning to the very end. And there's going to be persecution because of that. But this day is so special. We should never want to give it up. If you're willing to give it up, you really need to do some deep, deep digging in your heart as to what this day truly means to you. Because it's supposed to be filled with joy. It's supposed to be refreshing, rejuvenating. And the Sabbath is supposed to be uplifting. In verse 14 of chapter 31, It says, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. Going back to the severity of the penalty for breaking it. And then verse 16, it says, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It's not going away. It was never intended to go away. It was a distinct covenant with Israel, not to the exclusion of everybody else. Now he was using them in the beginning as a model nation, but we know he opened it up to Gentiles. That's why the New Testament is going to be significant when we look at it with Jesus Christ and how he works through that, which we can't do the Sabbath justice by only looking at the Old Testament, only looking at Israel. But with what I've already shown you, it's pretty concrete that this wasn't just for them because it predates them. But this has to be something that's holy for us as individuals, for each of us. We're going to look at one more thing real quick. If you flip back to Isaiah chapter 58. We're not going to get all the way through this, so I may have to touch on a couple pieces as we get into the next section next time. But I want to look at this because this is what the Sabbath is all about. I told you I can't give you the gray line beginning and end. I can't give you details of what he says to do and not do. But there are things, he does give us instructions. He does give us help to try to figure this out of what we're supposed to be doing, what this day actually means, what the focus is, and which is why this is a good spot to end on. It's Isaiah 58. If you look at verse 13, this becomes an even more binding part of the covenant that we have with God as his children, when we start to view the Sabbath from this light, something that is supposed to be holy to each of us as individuals, something that is supposed to be special. And what we end up doing is we do everything in our power to avoid trampling on the Sabbath, treating it just like any other day. If you look at verse 13, so this is Isaiah 58, starting in verse 13, it says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. So he does give us some guidelines. He does give us a framework and says, hey, work within this. He says, work within this. He goes, if I become the focus of this day, if my plan becomes the focus of this day, you're heading in the right direction. Because this is the intent of what I'm doing. And there's another way that this is phrased, doing as we please, instead of finding your own pleasure. It says, instead of doing as you please, there's a lot of things that we could be doing. Because I know, just like me, all of you have lists of, I need to get this done this week. I have this to do, I have this to do, I have this to do. I can't let this go past this week. This has to get done this week. But all of those get set aside today. Because he says, this is about me and this is about you. This is about us. This is where we really have to hone our mind in when we think about how we function, because God doesn't say this is supposed to be a tough day. This is supposed to be joyous. This is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be exciting, an uplifting day. He goes, put away your work. He says, have fun with the family. And that's the delineation between doing our own pleasure versus just our own pleasure and building the family. Because that is preaching the gospel. That's preaching the gospel, building God's family. It never stops. It's not supposed to stop. We know that God is continuously working and that we're going through this with that goal of becoming his children so that we can help other children come into the family. When we think about that from the perspective of the Sabbath and the sanctity of that and how we set this aside every single week of our life, it really starts to frame the world in a different view. It frames our week in a different view. So hopefully that has helped to see the beginnings and see how God has worked with it, the seriousness of it that he holds to it. Like I said, the death penalty, this isn't something he takes lightly. But also there's gray areas, which is why if you come and ask me, can I do this? I'm going to say, I don't know. Can you? That's because I don't have to answer for it. I have to answer for what I do. You'll have to answer for what you do. Now, there's things that I have in my household for my children to help them understand that, which they may change when they get older, because that's their relationship with God. So that kind of ties up this. I may, like I said, touch on a little bit more when we get into next week and 2 weeks. We'll talk about kind of sunset to sunset, but we hit that pretty heavy back in the spring. So I don't know how much I'll get into this, but we will get into Christ and his example, how Christ was involved, what he did and what he didn't do. And we're going to look at several examples of how he treated the Sabbath and what he did. And then we'll look at the New Testament in a whole.